Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome everybody to Wednesday on the Damage Report, and because it's Wednesday, I'm here. I'm Johnny DeRola, but J.R. Jackson is also here.
JR Wednesdays. JR Wednesdays. Woo! We need an intro. We need like dun 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 dun. JR Wednesdays. Dun 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 dun.
I think we just got our intro. I think we just play that at the beginning of the one.
JR Wednesdays.
Oh God. I forgot he's mocking. Anyway.
JR Wednesdays.
Okay, just come back to the one shot. We'll ignore him for the next hour. So this is gonna be a big show. We've got a lot to talk about. We're gonna start off with something that's just a little bit of fun, but also important, because we've had this national debate about whether there was a blue wave, and I believe that has been settled. And it only gets bluer with every election that gets called. I did a live video for the main show about all the numbers, and by the numbers, it's insane to deny it. But Donald Trump has been denying it, so we're gonna get some insider information from officials inside the White House about what he's actually thinking. Not what he's saying publicly, but his actual state of mind going into potentially the most treacherous portion of his presidency so far. We're also gonna do an update on the fight over the new Amazon HQ centers. Yesterday we showed how Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was opposing those. Turns out some people on Fox News support her as well. And then a little bit later on the show, we're gonna be closing out with who do people out there actually trust when it comes to media? You know, the ones that are actually polled on anyway, not like us. Who do they actually support? Like Republicans, when it comes to Fox News, who do they actually like and who do they not like? Very interesting information, which we'll have there for you. And we have a number on Tucker Carlson in particular that I think is absolutely hilarious. So stick around for that. But along the way, we're also gonna have two awesome guests. So Dr. Jonathan Salk is gonna be joining us in studio in about 10 minutes to talk about, while all of this is going on, all this bad stuff in the world, there is a trend in the background that could potentially be very, very good for the future of our species. We'll be breaking that down. And we're gonna be joined by one of the founders of the Sunrise Movement, Varshini Prakash, the people who did the Nancy Pelosi sit-in yesterday. The founder of that movement is gonna be joining us to talk about the Green New Deal, how we move forward, and you know what effect the young activists will have in that as well. So that should be good too. That said, why don't we jump into the news?
I'm down.
Donald Trump is dead set. There was no blue wave. In fact, he did way better than could have possibly been expected in these midterms. It's ridiculous when you look at the numbers. The Democrats did better than they have in literally decades in most of these areas. While picking up hundreds of state legislature races, tons of governorships, they won by like 7.5%, which is bigger than past waves, all of that. So the numbers don't bear out his claim that there was no blue wave, but he is still saying it in public. But behind the scenes, it's not looking so good. So now we get to do one of those fun things that happens 4 times a year, Donald Trump's dark mood. That's always one of my favorite things in the media.
It's only 4 times?
Something like that, yeah. It happens from time to time. So his mood apparently has changed as he has taken measure of the electoral backlash that voters delivered November 6th with the certainty of the upcoming Democratic House majority will go after his tax returns and investigate his actions and the likelihood of additional indictments by special counsel Robert Mueller. Trump has retreated into, and I love this, a cocoon of bitterness and resentment, according to multiple administration sources. And if you've been following his social media, well, he still says there was a blue wave. He is just lashing out at everyone. Like, he's potentially gonna be cleaning house of some of his highest level officials. He's attacking foreign dignitaries.
Yep.
Yes, he always does that to some extent. But he has been on a tear recently. I was described by one of the people that the Washington Post talked to. He's furious. Most staffers are trying to avoid him. And they said that he is a brooding president trying to decide who's to blame, even as he publicly claims that he has won.
This is, I don't know, there's so many elements of an insane dictatorial person in their mindset, along with a child. Mm-hmm. So the way that it, the way that these types of personalities collide, it ends up being scary. So you alluded to the going after foreign dignitaries. So as he was going to Paris on Friday, I was reading this just yesterday, Trump received a congratulatory phone call while he was on Air Force One from one Prime Minister, Theresa May.
Mm-hmm.
Of Britain, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
In doing so, he instead lashed out, went off on her, got mad at her about Brexit, anything else that he could possibly
Iran.
Blame her for. Yeah, Iran, their involvement with Iran. Mm-hmm. Anything he could blame her for that would be the reason why his party lost the House. Didn't lose the Senate, just lost the House, right? Mm-hmm. But that's enough. So he needs someone to glom onto. Maybe there was a sarcastic tone in her voice. Maybe she went, congratulations, mm-hmm. Donald.
Or maybe she didn't do any of that. Exactly. And it doesn't matter because he is a child.
And the thing is, it's absolutely, there's no way it's believable that she went on the phone and had a sarcastic tone and said, nice job, Donald. Mm-hmm. No, he's just so within his own feelings that that's what he hears. You know, if someone is sitting in the room and they're crying over something, and then someone comes and says, hey, you doing okay? I'm doing fine. No, my man, just checking on you, bruh.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. So he's so in it. And we talked about how he's worried about indictments coming down potentially with Trump Jr. and all these other people, players around him. He doesn't have the same level of cover that were provided to him in his first couple years in office. And he's panicking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why they're probably gonna be cleaning house. We saw a story, we didn't end up doing it yesterday, but it was that the chief of staff, so Kelly might be on the way out. Why? Because he's clashed with Melania Trump over travel details and things like that. That's not why. That's not actually why he potentially might be kicked out. There are other explanations, and you can read between the lines to get those. By the way, if you think, well, this is just one aide sort of complaining after the election. No, the Washington Post spoke with 14 administration officials that are not on the record, but the Washington Post knows who these people are, and they all tell the same story. Apparently, especially during his recent trip to Paris, they said that he brooded over the ongoing Florida recounts, which we know he's been talking a lot about, sulked over key races being called for Democrats. He erupted at his staff over media coverage of his decision to skip a ceremony honoring the military sacrifice of World War I. Well, here's the thing, you could have avoided that by going. And he had that experience. He didn't go to this thing. He hated the media coverage. So what does he do when he gets back? Well, for Veterans Day, it has been the tradition since JFK that you lay the wreath on the tomb of the unknown soldier. He doesn't do that either. It's 2 miles from the, like, you could just go and do it. He chose not to. And he's inviting this conflict with the media to some extent. Now, in the background too, we're not gonna talk too much about this, but apparently he's been pulling back from a lot of his normal duties, not just stuff like this honoring thing. But on Monday of this week, the White House press corps said that he was done. They called a lid on activities at 10:03 a.m.
No, man.
He was just done. He wasn't doing anything more.
This is a 11-year-old going through puberty.
Mm-hmm.
12-year-old sitting in his room locked up. I'm not coming out all day. This is. And then it sounds like, I'm joking about it, but this is exactly, how are you gonna put a lid on, you're the president of the United States, you go in the White House and you say, hey, tell them I'm not coming out, mm-hmm. sad today.
Yeah.
No, that's not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
You're a 72-year-old man, if you don't wanna do it, leave.
Yeah, leave, you can leave anytime you want, you'll be perfectly fine.
There's no law that says you have to stick around and put up with these meanies mm-hmm. that keep holding you accountable and make sure you're, honestly, carry out the most basic tasks. Like, again, laying the wreath, it's a ceremony.
Yeah, you should be honored to be able to do it.
Nothing is more important than what's in his own mind. Like, he's like, you know what, they hurt my feelings. People are coming after me now. They said they're gonna do this and that. Nothing is more important. Yeah.
And look, here's why I think that this is important. This is not just, you know, it's fun. It is fun, but this is important because, look, some people will say, well, why are you focusing on his mood? And if he's not doing any of his duties and he's lashing out at people, that's just the president. People actually say this, people who want to pretend that the president isn't the single most powerful person on the face of the earth right now. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to play that game here. The reason it's important is Donald Trump is not in this cocoon of resentment and fury, and that's it. He just sort of just hides in his room for the rest of his presidency. He feels he has lost control. He wants that control back.
Yep.
Based on what you know of Donald Trump, how does he try to get that control? Does he work with the other side in pushing for legislation that will improve the conditions of the working class in America? No, of course not. He's going to do crazy things. And so this video that we're doing right now is both, you know, a little bit of schadenfreude, I guess, after the election, but it is also a warning that in all of these areas where he still has extreme unilateral control over government policy, a control that he has been willing to use since day one, God only knows what sorts of executive orders he will put forward, who he will nominate for positions. And so when he goes into this cocoon, that is a warning sign for you to buckle up, okay? Hold on to your butts, as they say in Jurassic Park, because bad things are probably coming.
Before he had the ability to tell the folks that were covering for him, hey, you're Republican, I can get you kicked out of here. I can make sure I campaign against you, which he did against several of them that he thought were against him. He doesn't have that control over certain folks anymore. And we'll see how what they do. We'll see if they follow through with the things that they say they want to do with these incoming Democrats. But he doesn't have that anymore. So now all that's left is, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, as an early sign of the sorts of things he might be willing to do, I know some people want to pretend that this isn't a big story, but they banned a reporter from the White House. And it's so egregious that all of these different media outlets have filed amicus briefs over the lawsuit that CNN is launching against the White House. Fox News joined it today. They are fighting with those other media outlets because they know that this is an unprecedented, insane thing to do. But it is exactly the sort of thing you do if you-
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Feel you've lost control and you want to feel like the big kid in the room again. So, you know, watch out for more of that. With that said, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Dr. Jonathan Salk is going to be joining us in the background of all of this. What is the future of humanity? He's going to have a little bit of reason to potentially feel optimism for the future after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. Obviously, things are looking pretty bad in America over the past couple of years, but is there a case to be optimistic about the future? I'm not going to make that case to you, but we do have someone who I think is qualified to. Dr. Jonathan Salk, welcome to the show.
I'm really glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. So you assistant clinical professor at UCLA, but very well known for this book, A New Reality. If you come to me, you can see the book. There you go. And so I want to talk to you about the thesis of this book as updated for modern times. So you've had a belief for decades about the arc of human evolution in terms of population and how that affects human civilization and culture.
Right.
So what is that thesis?
The basic thesis is that there's that we're in a time of conflict. And that there's a way into it and a way out of it. Mm-hmm. Looking at it from the standpoint of population, we've had centuries or millennia of population increase without limits, without a ceiling to growth. And we're entering a time where there's going to be ceilings to growth and we have to adapt to a new situation. Mm-hmm. The big idea is that we're moving from a time in which values of competition, independence, and rampant unlimited scavenging of resources changes to a time where we're interdependent, cooperative, and operating on a basis of sustainability.
So you believe that during a time where the population is growing, and over the past 100 years or so, it's growing particularly rapidly, that inspires people to be more competitive, to sort of squabble over resources, try to gobble everything up.
Exactly.
But that will transition as the population growth levels off or starts to decline. We won't have that anymore.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
In order to adapt to a world in which we have limits, we will, in order to survive, we'll actually, not automatically, but with a great deal of effort, change our value system.
Okay. So you originally wrote this book with your father back in 1981,
right?
Correct? Okay.
Right.
So if we take those two data points, so 1981, 2018, you know, back decades ago, you were saying we expect that this change is going to happen, it will level off. How have the intervening decades affected your belief in that? Is it playing out the way that you suspected?
It is playing out. I mean, if we look at UN population projections, population growth began slowing about 15 or 20 years ago, and will level off at around 10, 11, 12 billion, depending on how we handle it, which is still a lot of people.
A lot of extra people.
But it is scheduled to, it is projected to level off, barring disaster, barring other changes.
So why is that? Why has it been leveling off?
Well, it's a really interesting story. It's one of the great stories that's sort of embedded in the book. But it turns out that as people's lives improve, as education of women, infant mortality goes down, health conditions and sustainable development, people decide to have smaller families in order to adapt to those different conditions. So it's a real win-win in that improving people's lives slows the population growth even faster.
Which potentially could then improve people's lives long term.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay, so I am curious, one thing sort of, at the same time that we're seeing this potential transition from a rapidly accelerating growth of human population to it leveling off or even declining in the next 70 or so years, I think is a number that I saw you cite.
Yeah.
At the same time, we have this battle over climate change, which is sort of radically altering the ability of the Earth to sustain human life. How do you see that influencing, if at all, this process?
Oh, I mean, it's a huge part of the process. And to sort of state the obvious, we need to adapt. We need to slow climate change and basically stop it if we're to survive and if the other species are going to survive. Mm-hmm. What we get, though, and what we've got now is just tremendous conflict of, like, the old set of values that are based on growth, fossil fuels, and basically competition and exploitation. Mm-hmm. And that's coming a cropper of and in conflict with a new set of values that we need to adapt in order to survive in the conditions of the future. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing just a tremendous amount of conflict around that. The way out of it is actually to transition to those new values.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that begs the question, what do we as individuals and governments do to manage that transition over the next 4, 5, 6, 7 decades?
A lot.
Okay. Okay. Well, we can at least start the conversation.
All right. That's good. It's actually this kind of change is going to affect every level of society. So we definitely need to address issues of climate change, but we also need to address our social and political systems because our social and political systems have been based on growth and unlimited exploitation of resources. Mm-hmm. We're going to be entering a new time where that's not true. So. We need to generate these new economies. So there's room for people at the theoretical level and at the policy level to do this. In terms of people's lives, we need to raise kids who have these values. Mm-hmm. We need to operate by these values in the course of our daily lives, in our work, in our community, in our politics, in our public.
So you mentioned generating these new economies. So specifically on the economy, do you see? So we have some assumptions about industry, what the role of corporations in our society is, how they should operate. Obviously, they are produced to generate the most profit possible. They might be the purest example of the value system that you describe under the current growth of population.
Right.
Do you see that changing? Is that going to be a thing that we just need to change how we view these corporations? Are governments going to need to exert more control over the economy?
It's a great question, and I'm not sure I don't have a slam dunk answer to it, but I do have a perspective on it, which is that that corporations will need to evolve themselves in terms of the values, in terms of what they do, both in response to public opinion, policy, but also in terms of what is profitable for them, what helps their own survival. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about this change that I'm describing is it isn't just because it's a goody two shoes thing. It isn't just because it's morally right or morally better. It's that from a pragmatic standpoint, in order for us to survive and to live together, these are changes that will evolve and that have to evolve.
Okay, so look, I think that you give a good reason, going forward to be optimistic. So just take a mental snapshot of the optimism and keep that in the background. As I ask one more question that's a little bit more pessimistic, what could go wrong? So what could happen in the next half century to stop this transition that you've sketched out from happening?
A lot. The biggest danger we have is a significant number of people clinging to the old values, sort of turning back. I mean, what we've got at this point is an uncertain point of transition, and we've got one set of people who are looking forward to the newer values. We've got one set of people who say, I don't know what the heck is going on here. Mm-hmm. I want to be back. I want to be back with the old values. I want to be great again. Mm-hmm. There's a danger if we do that we're going to decimate the planet.
Yeah.
And there's also a danger that if we continue with isolationist, independent policies, that we provoke war and But the results both in famine and potentially nuclear destruction. So there's a lot that can go wrong.
Yeah. And we have seen before that when you have these times of great social and economic change, some of the people who we're transitioning away from don't take that well. And like an animal with their back to the wall, they can lash out.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what we're doing. You know, that's what we're dealing with. I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic that what we're seeing in our current political climate is a last gasp of those values as we enter into the future.
Oh, well, there's some more optimism for you. We can actually, as hoped, end on a note of optimism. So, Dr. Jonathan Salk, great to have you here.
It was really great to be here.
Thank you. The book is A New Reality. If you're feeling anxious, as apparently at least 70% of you are, give this a read and feel a little bit of optimism going forward. If not for us, at least for our kids.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, thank you so much.
Okay, great.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Jer will be rejoining us. The fight over one of these industries, actually, Amazon, continues, coming from both the left and the right. Welcome back to the show, everyone. JR back in studio. Let's talk about Amazon. So Amazon has announced that they've got their two new headquarters, New York and near DC. Not everyone happy about it. On yesterday's show, we broke down how Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman-elect, is fighting back against the actual expected economic effects of this Amazon headquarter in her district, which is not just new jobs being created, but billions of dollars being given to them. Huge issues with that. That argument has been very appealing, but not just appealing to people on the left. Take a look at Fox News.
Well, new Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had this to say today, quote, Amazon is a billion-dollar company. The idea that it will receive hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks at a time when our subway is crumbling and our communities need more investment, not less, is extremely concerning to residents here. Hate to admit it, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a very good point.
Hate to admit it, but Tucker Carlson is right. He is a human ingrown hair, but he's right. So here is the thing about people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, progressive politicians like that. They speak in a way that rings true to real people. Not Tucker Carlson, he's not a real person, he's an heiress effectively. Technically heir, I guess. But he knows that like regular conservatives don't want to give corporations billions of dollars. They've grown accustomed to it in some industries like the oil and stuff like that. But it does seem crazy to real people.
I guess I'll take it as a start because I listened to the rest of that. He had an interview with another guy. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. But they went through the whole thing. And what you end up getting to, because they're still on the conservative network of Fox News, mostly, where they'll the whole reason, the reason behind his support for what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was saying is that, yeah, it's Jeff Bezos and that lib company Amazon. Mm-hmm. There's this shadow or this they paint this picture of Amazon as being this progressive lib company that all liberals like. So you should dislike them because liberals like them. Mm-hmm. Because Donald Trump went out against Amazon because he had issues with them. This isn't anything new. A corporation comes in and potentially can destroy a community, but takes all of the benefits and gives nothing to it. Yeah. That's not anything new. Mm-hmm. But
I'll accept them late in the day.
But then they're ready. But they're not going to bring up oil companies, coal companies, these corporations that come in and use up all the resources of a community, slap a headquarters in, and then give nothing back. They don't care because those corporations paid off their politicians to do it, and they like those politicians.
I just want them to prime their viewers. Just put a little bit, you know, like sometimes you got to score something before you cut it. Just put a little bit of a crack there in the conservative viewers, and then our politicians will come in and they will be shocked at what is on offer.
So if you can look it up, because I've seen someone else talking about it, a conservative talking about what Amazon is doing, which is all true, and then if you insert this oil company here.
Yeah.
This bank here and the benefits they receive from the community and give nothing back. Mm. In fact, destroy it outright. See if they go, yeah, it's the same thing. They'll go, no, that's different.
Well, we'll
like
see.
Those guys.
Look, you're going to be shocked to find out. I don't like Fox News. I'm giving him a little bit of credit there, but I also hate him. Did just call him an ingrown hair. So to give you an idea of how Amazon, now we know where they're going. They're going to New York and they're going near DC. But many places across the country were trying to get them to come. And it's only coming out in some cases now what they actually offered. So take a look at this tweet. What Georgia offered Amazon, a state-funded academy to train its employees, an exclusive lounge with free parking at the world's busiest airport, a dedicated car on MARTA, and more than $2 billion in public publicly funded incentives.
Jeez.
So New York is giving, like $1.5 billion, and they're subsidizing a helipad. I don't know if they're getting the free parking at JFK, but these places were just fighting over themselves to hand over this money. You could just create the industries yourself if you wanted to do that. But I know that's crazy. That's like socialism or whatever.
Yeah, it's one of those things. They don't like to cut it down the middle. So Georgia, I'm not sure which part of Georgia they were trying to have this put in.
I think it's got to be near Atlanta if they're giving them that dedicated.
Right. Yeah, and then whatever ends up getting shut down because of it, I don't know if the community realizes how close they came to it. Because there's jobs that are created and all that stuff, and then we'll see which kind of way they do it. But it's not always as beneficial. I just wish it was broken down across the board as to what happens. Outright. I mean, we had this president and his EPA chief going into coal plants down in the bottom saying, yeah, we're with the coal guys. Mm-hmm. No mention of what those companies do to the community and how their employees get screwed over. It's not just Amazon, but it is also Amazon. I don't want you to get me wrong either, because they're going to assume that, oh, the libs are all about Amazon. Mm-hmm. No, we understand what's going on.
J.R. Prime Jackson over here, apologist for Amazon. Anyway, okay, let's transition just a little bit. There is something about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that just gets under Fox News' skin. Like, we gave Tucker Carlson credit, a little bit. But in general, like, she's great, and history-making, youngest congresswoman. She's awesome, and she is the future. Fox News can't get enough of her, and not always positive. So Parker Malloy on Twitter put together a montage of literally 24 hours of Fox News. Here is how often she came up.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
So that was awesome. Now, technically, that's Fox and Fox Business or whatever, but
it's all the same.
So I love that Stuart Varney, he is whipping out like this like amazing pronunciation. He doesn't actually know what her name is, but he's really trying. Some of them still can't pronounce it. It's like Bill Maher. It's been months she's been in the news.
Well,
why can't you pronounce it?
They didn't care much. Well, a little bit they cared once they realized. Once she took out Connolly.
Crowley.
Crowley.
Yeah,
I don't know why I call him Connolly. So that's when they first hit the radar, like, oh, this is over, but what is she gonna do? So then they went with the, oh, she's so young and stupid and doesn't know anything about politics, how dare she? Mm-hmm. And then now, once she tweaked them on the, hey, you might wanna say my name right, they heard it. They're trying really hard.
They're trying.
And I wanna give credit for them trying a little hard, but it's just because they don't wanna be in the news, be like, they keep messing up her name.
I wanna give them credit, but I also wanna point out, it's not a complicated name. My name is way more complicated, and people usually can muddle through it. Like, get used to it. She's gonna be around for a little bit. But anyway, also, Laura Ingraham, yeah, I think that she's a stalker. God. I would watch out if I was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, they are talking about her a lot. You'll be surprised to find out it's not positive. They lump her in with some of these other incoming freshman congresswomen, and they want you to be scared. But they're not quite sure how to make that case yet, as you'll see in this screenshot from Fox News from yesterday. Radical new democratic ideas. And you're seeing Ayanna Pressley there, and Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, and AOC. Oh my God, free college for all, say it ain't so, Fox News. Free healthcare? No, but I need healthcare, I don't want it free. And so look, abolish ICE will scare conservatives definitely, and Green New Deal, nobody watching Fox News knows what that is. So hopefully they'll tune into the next block of this show and they'll find out. Here's the thing, you're trying to scare them with policies that are popular. If we bring up this poll, you're gonna see a policy for Medicare for All, Democrat and Republican, very supportive. Overall, it's like 70% support it. Free college tuition, yes, it's split amongst the Republicans, but it has majority support. Abolishing ICE is the only one that's sort of controversial, but even a lot of Republicans like that idea. So if you're gonna try to take her down, you're gonna have to come with something stronger than she supports a lot of scary, incredibly popular mainstream policy positions.
Yeah, they're trying hard. Laura Ingraham went hard on all four of them again also last night. She was talking about they're anti-Semitic, they have a war on men, they're wacky. Anti-Israel bias, it's so disturbing what they're doing, and showed a picture of them sitting there at the table. I think AOC, of course, also tweeted that or Instagrammed it, threw it out there. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, who's afraid of these four women who came in and broke some barriers?
Fox News.
But they're trying hard to make everybody go,
yeah.
Like, no, they're four folks who are representative of their constituents.
Yeah.
How scary and un-American is that?
Oh my God. Okay, with that, we're going to take another break. When we come back, Varshini Prakash, founder of Sunrise Movement, that staged that awesome sit-in outside of Nancy Pelosi's office in D.C. yesterday, will be joining us on the show to break down what that protest was about and how we get to where we need to be on the environment. So yesterday, the hallway outside Nancy Pelosi's office was one of the hottest spots in D.C., with hundreds of environmental activists camping outside of it, pushing for change necessary to avert climate change. They were members of Sunrise Movement, and we're very blessed now at the Damage Report to welcome Varshini Prakash, founder and communications director of Sunrise Movement. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So we're very excited about the protest and the possibility that she could be moved in the right direction on these issues. But for those who might not have seen the live video and the coverage yesterday of that protest movement, what were you hoping to accomplish?
Yeah, so yesterday, as you said, we had hundreds of youth activists with Sunrise Movement. We were showing up to Nancy Pelosi's office on the first day of the new Congress because we've really seen the way that the fires that are happening in California to date have killed 48 people. We've seen the way that they have leveled entire towns, and we've seen the way that our generation is truly terrified and freaked out about the UN climate report that came out 3 weeks ago that says that we have literally 12 years to radically transform our economy and society at scale to stop the climate crisis. And so we were there on the first day of the new Congress to say to Nancy Pelosi that her climate plan that she came out with on Tuesday to resuscitate an ancient committee to educate the public about the crisis is not enough. She is fighting this drought-induced hellfire with literally a squirt gun, and we need more from our leadership. So the two demands that we came at Nancy Pelosi and Democratic Party leadership yesterday was to back a program like a Green New Deal to transform our society and economy over the next decade and protect human civilization as we know it, and that Democratic Party leadership mandate that any person in the party leadership should take the No Fossil Fuel Money Pledge, which calls on politicians to reject donations from oil and gas executives and lobbyists who are threatening our generation's future.
So I want to talk to you about the first of those two demands. So the Green New Deal. Here in America, we've been told for literally decades that if we were to do anything about climate change, it would wreck our economy, destroy jobs, and all of that. So is that actually the case? What would the Green New Deal produce?
Yeah, that is simply not true. We are talking about a Green New Deal. A lot of people talk about a Green New Deal in different ways. And the way that we're thinking about it is a broad transformative program that would quite literally create millions upon millions of good paying green jobs for Americans, that it would involve massive reinvestment in communities on the front lines of crisis, low-income folks, people of color, that it would force politicians to stop taking money from oil and gas executives. It would end tax bailouts and subsidies for fossil fuel companies and fossil fuel CEOs. There's a whole bunch of technical things about a Green New Deal that will really improve our economy and our quality of life. But what it really comes down to is that we ought to create a world, an economy, and a society where people can breathe fresh air, people can drink fresh water, people can live free from harm and chaos and violence. And that is at the very core of what a Green New Deal is all about. And we are so grateful that people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and all of these badass women of color, first-year congresswomen are backing a Green New Deal. And we think there's a lot of activism and energy to come in the next few weeks.
Virginia, it's JR. We saw Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yesterday talk about letting Nancy Pelosi know that we back her to do something like this, things like the Green New Deal. What is the approach, if any, right now, at least from your group, as far as getting also maybe some Republicans on the side? Because we talked before about getting money out of politics, and if many times Republicans are set free of that, they also have more of a chance to do the right thing. Is there an approach right now you have to get them on board for things that many people, honestly, I'm one of them, don't think they have much of a reason to do?
Yeah, it's real. I think there is a lot of common cause here. I think we've been pushing Republicans and Democrats to take the no fossil fuel money pledge over the last year and a half. We got over 1,200 politicians to sign on to the no fossil fuel money pledge. Not many of them were GOP members, but we think that there is a lot of room for improvement there. Right now, we're pushing on Democrats because we think there's actually a real possibility that we can make something happen here. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced a resolution for a new House Select Committee on a Green New Deal to replace the committee that Nancy Pelosi is talking about reviving that would have that previously had no actual funding or power to draft legislation. So we think that there's a lot of leverage there, but we're going to keep pushing both political parties to do their part to stop this crisis. I do think that it's become abundantly clear that the GOP has been completely and utterly bought out by big oil. A vast majority of the campaign contributions that went to that came from oil and gas went to Republicans. And so we're at Sunrise are also going to be working really hard to not only elect climate champions, but also boot out fossil fueled politicians as well. And one of the biggest things that we need to do to pass these types of policies is to take political power.
Yeah. So we've got this context of these terrible wildfires, you know, worsening hurricanes, all these environmental problems. You also have the recent UN report that you mentioned. For some people, even people on the left who don't necessarily prioritize climate change as one of their top issues, has the what was described in that UN report, is that lighting a fire under people to take this problem more seriously? Are you seeing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that report was terrifying. And there was this moment in the protest yesterday where, right as we were starting the sit-in, I asked a question to the crowd. And I said, how many of the young people here today, on the night that the UN climate report came out, felt your heart drop into your stomach and felt your future flash before your eyes? And every single person in the room, all 200 people, raised their hands in unison. And you could just see the sheer immensity and the weight that young people hold right now in people's eyes. So I think young people are fired up about this issue. We had a call 2 days after the IPCC report came out to sort of process with young people around the country about what this meant. And 400 people signed up to get on that call. There's a lot of momentum behind it, and people are freaked out. But luckily, movements like Sunrise and other movements are there for people to participate and put some of those blues into action. Best remedy for climate anxiety, as I've found, is to actually translate that into action.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Virginia, thank you so much for joining us on the show and for your activist measures yesterday.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We come back a little bit more for you. We have a case being made on Fox for why recounts shouldn't be done in elections. That is probably the stupidest thing I've heard this month. We'll have it for you after this. Okay, only moments remaining in the show, but a lot to get to. So let's transition. You've heard a lot of arguments for why we shouldn't have recounts in Florida coming from the right. I believe that this on Fox and Friends might be the dumbest.
And I think part of the fun of voting and having your voice heard is finding out on election night. We all stay up really late to see what these votes, what when they come in and when these races are called. If you aren't, or you're still counting votes after 10 days, and I understand if it's super close, you
it's
have to
close.
Do that. And it is down there. But if you're still counting votes, if they change it for going forward, we're still counting ballots 10 days after, it kind of takes the fun out of election night.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to take the fun out to get it right, though, Ainsley, right?
Well,
and we just
that.
Go
if
back
really
to election
close,
day being
you have
election.
To do it.
Ultimately, though.
I love that. That's Kilmeade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kilmeade's body language is so uncomfortable. He's like, no, you're. I'm hearing crazy things right now. What are you talking about, excitement? It's the future of our democracy.
It helps answer the question, do they plan the ridiculous things that are said? Because then he heard her say it and went, no, that doesn't
I don't
make
think
any
they
sense.
Plan the end of a sentence when they begin it. They just find themselves saying crazy things. Yeah, now thankfully, look, Ducey says it's close. Like, he acknowledges that this isn't a game, it's actually an election. And then Kilmeade thankfully stepped in and he was the responsible one in the room, which that's some room if he's the one who's on point.
I don't like overtime games. Takes the fun out of the whole rest of the other four quarters.
This isn't like a marriage where you're trying to get the spark back. It's an election that has a defined outcome based on who voted. Imagine, and do you really believe that she would say that if the lead going into overtime was reversed? And I'm not sure, honestly, because this is the same woman who, I just gotta say it, said that back in the day, America defeated communist Japan. The emperor's rolling in his grave. Yes, she said that. No, Jesus, awesome. You could say anything. You just have to be chipper to be on Fox and Friends. You have to be conservative and chipper.
It's a morning show. Gotta say, it's no longer fun. It's all good.
Yeah, Fox and Friends. They need to get some new friends. Okay, let's turn to something else. So Republicans have a lot of different conservative pundits that they can follow, you know, with different styles, like really white nationalist and kind of white nationalist and increasingly white nationalist, different shades. But who do they actually like? Well, Morning Consult did a poll, and here are Republicans' favorite Fox News hosts specifically. Tucker Carlson actually won. Now, this is really interesting because Sean Hannity, who you see down there, plus 22% net favorability, he's got the show that gets the most views in general. But Tucker Carlson, even though he doesn't have quite as many viewers, is the one most beloved. Ainsley Earhart, the communist Japan one, she's in third. And Laura Ingraham, so here's the thing, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham have the best ratings there. What do they have in common? It is that those two, out of all of those names on that list, are the most explicitly white nationalists that focus the most on racial arguments for things. I mean, obviously, look, the others do too, for the most part, but they're the worst. Are you surprised by these numbers?
I'm a little bit surprised, but Tucker Carlson is the one who took over Bill O'Reilly's slot when he was finally ousted. Mm-hmm. So he kind of inherited, and Bill O'Reilly knew was like the most popular host and all that stuff. So he inherited a good number of the audience. It's just, I wonder how closely they watch him. Because sure, he, you know, he toes the line.
He gets
and says
almost
the right
as many viewers.
Yeah, he toes all those lines. Like they hold on because people have their schedule of their television watching. Like, oh, at 8 o'clock I watch this, and then it switched over to Tucker. I'm still watching because it's 8 o'clock. Yeah. So he inherited probably a good amount. But eventually, I would think they'd hear him go ha 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 in the middle of an interview, and they go,
that's a little weird. You would think that a few people watching Fox News would say, why is his face always doing that? But I guess you can have a weird face thing and still do quite well. So why do you have over all the way up there, you have Tucker Carlson doing quite well, and then down here, right here, Shep Smith is the standout doing poorly.
Oh, we know.
I think I might know. So understand that LexisNexis shows that the network used the word caravan 86 times on air the day before the election, in one day. 86 times, so that's like sort of a stand-in for their racial fear-mongering and all of that. What was Shep Smith's approach to the favorite Fox topic for that week? Well, he said on October 29th, there is no invasion, no one's coming to get you, there's nothing at all to worry about. And Fox viewers said, how dare you try to get me to come out from under my bed? I hate you now, Shep Smith, you're the worst.
He's trying to get us killed.
Yes, but I do want to mention, I said at the beginning of the show, I want to give you what I think is one of the funniest stats, and we did find it. Now, Fox News is the highest profile right-wing media outlet in the country. Tucker Carlson, I keep almost calling him Chris Tucker, there's a big difference. Tucker Carlson is one of the most high profile people there, and he's been in media for year after year after year. 32% of Republicans say they've never heard of Tucker Carlson. That's amazing, almost the same as Shep Smith, by the way. Yeah. So he is the darling child of the right, and one out of three Republicans don't know who the hell he is, which I don't really think says too much about Tucker Carlson. Like, he should not get as big of a head as he probably does, but it says more about the fact that even these most high profile media outlets, they don't reach everybody. Like I say this all the time about Twitter. Twitter's not representative. Only the most extreme people of every kind go on Twitter to talk about politics. And only kind of extreme people watch MSNBC or CNN or Fox News, but especially Fox News out of those. Yeah. Like, there's lots of people that technically care about politics, but don't actually watch any of this stuff.
Don't get ahead of yourself, Tucker.
Yeah, exactly. They all know who I am. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Great JR Wednesday for you. Thank you for watching, everybody. Rate the podcast if you haven't, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.